Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, how will the new anti-terrorist measures affect doctors and Muslim patients?
The British government has launched its latest strategy to prevent people from being drawn into terrorism and extremism. The Prevent Strategy 2011 sets out plans on how the government will deal with all forms of terrorism. According to the new policy, doctors and health professionals will be asked to identify people who are allegedly vulnerable to being drawn into terrorism. Executive Chairman of the Institute of Community Cohesion and Professor of Coventry University, Ted Cantle, said that this new approach outlined by the Home Office is spying on the Muslim community. British Medical Association said that the doctors cannot look into the future and say how someone might behave. BMA has also said that this would threaten the trust of the doctor and patient relationship. In this episode, Islam and Life will investigate how will the new anti-terrorist measures affect doctors and Muslim patients.
Yes, these are important questions. We have seen over the last 10 years after September 11 in the United States of America and then after 7/7 in the UK measures, and we are all talking, and all the governments mainly talking about radicalization, what can be done to protect the societies from people who are perceived or defined as terrorists from within. And then you have the consequences on freedom when it comes to citizens, on now medical doctors and patients when it comes to spying on them and giving information that are in fact helping or should help the government or police to survey or to look at what is happening within the society. I think that these are questions that are important as the consequences of this war on terror and radicalization. New names, same strategies with consequences that are very dangerous for the citizens, and mainly, of course, the Muslim citizens, but not only, because this has also consequences on all the public sphere and the society as a whole, and the Western and European societies, not only in the UK, but everywhere. So these are questions we have to ask, and to answer these questions, I'm joined by Dr. Adnan Siddiqui, a medical professional and doctor of and director of Cage Prisoners. Thank you for being with us today. You have been working on the field of violence, radicalization, with people having been put in jail for sometimes no reasons, and all this business that we have today about terrorism and radicalizations. Now, you are also a medical doctor, a GP, and you are facing all these new rules or at least expectations coming from the government when it comes to your patients. And when they are Muslims, you should look at what could be the signs of future radicalization. And it's quite dangerous. So what is the state of affairs today in the UK, for example?
Well, if you look at this Prevent document, they actually have said that since 2010, they have already trialed and piloted this Prevent strategy in the healthcare sector. Without really any consultation with doctors or health authorities, they've said in nine areas, health regions, that they've actually already done that, rolled it out, given training.
But
to
when you say they, who is
the government?
They? It's the government?
The government,
but
yes.
Specific people in the government?
I would say it's the Home Office. It's a Home Office document. Yeah. They've said this is the actual thing. The important thing for us as doctors is that we have to base everything upon evidence. If you're asking me to look out for something, it might be diabetes, it might be cancer. There are things that we are taught and we know which the signs are. Now, radicalization is a political term. Now, you're asking me not to look at someone's physical health. You're now telling me what is their ideological health. I think that's a very worrying development. And more importantly, as a doctor, if I throw it back to them, I'd say that, well, please tell me that where is the research to suggest that with these signs, whatever they might be. I mean, I was having this conversation with a journalist several years back where I was saying there might be a time, and it was very unfortunately prophetic when I say this, that they might be asking doctors to look for those people who are Islamist positive. In the same way you have HIV positive, yeah. They would look for the virus of Islamism. And sadly, it seems now that's come to pass.
But when you have, for example, we had exactly the same story in many other countries. And for example, even the president who was at that time, the home minister, Nicolas Sarkozy, was saying about the young kids, you can just study their situation before when they are very young in order to know if they are going to be violent, marginalized in the future. Still, what we have now is that some are saying radicalization has to do with religious understanding. Some are saying it has to do with political understanding. Some are saying it's both religious and political understanding. And some are saying that's all true, but they are features that you can find in certain mindsets, way of looking at the reality. And this is why some are saying it's also a medical issue. What is your answer to those people who are saying it has to do with psychology? And you can see that some people, when they are in a state of, you know, despair, not happy, not feeling well in this society, you know, the lack of this sense of belonging, I'm not at home. So if you have a religious understanding that you can act against the people who are not your people, you know, all this coming together. What would you, your response from a medical viewpoint to people saying that?
I think that's a very important point. I think that really, from my perspective, we deal with that kind of problem daily. People who are labeled with mental illness. In fact, the Prevent strategy actually highlights and mentions that the people who are very vulnerable to radicalization, they don't specifically say Muslim, but they say those who have mental health disorders and learning disabilities. Both of these people are more likely to be marginalized, stigmatized, so they are likely to have problems. Now, I work in an inner city part of London, and I know that many of the problems, I'm not there to medicate people. If someone is upset and depressed because of their housing, because of their financial situation, because of their personal life, it is not my job to automatically reach for the prescription pad and say, this person needs to have antidepressants. I'm more interested in trying to make sure that the causes are dealt with. So I often say to patients, have you spoken to your MP? Have you spoken to a counsellor? Have you actually gone to police and security services to deal with issues of crime in your area? So it's a much more holistic view.
Yes.
And if you want, as a doctor, just say, the prescription is the answer, that's wrong. Many of the solutions are coming from political solutions.
Yes.
And that's where actually the onus is being put on us to identify people and not actually ask the question, why is this person feeling disenfranchised? Why is that person feeling marginalized? Why is that person feeling disaffected?
But when, for example, and this is the heart of the question, the core of the question, what we had, for example, in the UK and in the States, even in Madrid, even in Bali, what we got is people who are not disenfranchised, are not educated, are having, you know, health problem. They were very, some of them, the great majority of them, very well educated,
yes.
High level, intelligent people, smart. And then still you can see features that are the same in the perception of the surrounding society. It's us versus them. These are non-Muslims. We are Muslims. And then reading the world in a way which is the same. As a medical doctor, if you deal with people like this, can you see these features? Can you say there is a potential here towards radical views and radicalization?
I think it's a very interesting question. I think certainly from my perspective as a doctor, and I've worked in my area for nearly 15 years, you have a very deep understanding, and people treat you more as a family friend. So they can obviously vocalize and visualize all of their kind of fears and hopes and anxieties. But the thing is that you're talking now about things which also people's political and their deep-rooted beliefs, which are not appropriate for the consultation room. These are issues that someone might say to me in private. I mean, when I read the document, I thought of a Greek patient of mine 2 months ago who actually said he sympathized what Bin Laden was going through. And the thing is that, would that mean I have to report the guy? He's not Muslim. But he had lost his business. He was in terrible situation. But he was articulating a viewpoint to say that he understood why someone might take this course of action. Now, that's very worrying, because for us as doctors, there is a very important point, which is the trust aspect. our consultation.
And trusting you as a medical doctor.
Absolutely.
And confidentiality,
yes,
of anything which is said.
Absolutely.
To you as a,
yes,
medical. So the main concern for you as a medical doctor, as someone who is working, is what is expected from you, or is it this confusion between medicalizing political views? Mm. Is it both? Is it one more than the other? What is the problem that you have with the new regulation?
Well, I think it combines all of those aspects. Right. I mean, from my perspective, is that I do understand, and I would say to you that the actual discussion related to if we are concerned about somebody, there are points where we can say that if somebody is looking to commit suicide, or that they might be in danger, that their ex-partner, that they're trying to kill them or something like this, there is a link there that we can say that we have concerns, and we would actually be saying, as a rule, we have to override the confidentiality aspect. But this is well researched, and things which have been actually looked at with the police sector, with forensic psychiatry, with all of these aspects. It's been well researched. However, these are issues which are very, very different,
yeah,
which have not had the research to back them up. And I have every viewpoint to say, yes, safeguarding society, looking that maybe somebody in a moment of passion or stupidity might do something which might be dangerous. But the reality is that this is something that there's never been any proof of it. I've asked in many fora about this, to ask that what are the actual signs of radicalization? If you're asking me to look at what are called red flag signs, as a doctor we're always asked about this, where's the proof that these are actually resulting in, as mentioned in the piece before, that you can predict that this person is likely,
yes,
to end up?
They are not asking you to predict 100%, but there is a potential.
Well, there's a potential for anything.
For anything, yes.
There's a potential for anything.
But I want to ask you something which is, for me, quite important as a responsibility, as a medical doctor, as a citizen. What we had, for example, if a Muslim or a potential terrorist who is not a Muslim is coming to a fellow citizen and telling him or her, I'm going to do that, out of trust, the citizen is expected, if this is a potential reality, to say something and say, no, you can't do it, to prevent him, and then if it's not possible, to just to inform the police. Mm. If you, as a medical doctor, you can get such information from someone who is trusting you, a man and a woman, do you understand that it's your duty to speak about it or not? Is this within the limit of confidentiality as your job, it's your code of ethics, or not?
Well, the first thing I would say is that there is a duty to the patient, but there's a duty to the wider society. And from my perspective, there was a section in the PREVENT strategy which is quite fair, which is to say that they want to debate the thing called no secrets, which means that the conversation, consultation that you have with a patient should not go outside. And I agree with that in its principle. But what my submission to the Home Office was that essentially that you don't make a unilateral decision to say there is no longer a no secrets thing. Okay. This needs to have a debate between ethicists, between lawyers, between people as civil libertarians, between the security service and between frontline health workers, because we all have various views. And until you actually bring it together and actually have a discussion and debate, because my role, I always view, is I have to look after the patient and to respect their confidentiality, and that what goes on between me and them is that's sacred. It's something I cannot break. However, I do have a wider role also to protect society.
Yes. And your concern is that coming from the government, there was no consultation,
no
discussion with the specialists.
Yes, absolutely.
And this is the problem. Mm-hmm. Now, if we have to think about how can we react to this, because once again, we see in all the Western countries, by the way, not only in Europe, not only in the UK, that they are in the name of this, radicalization and the problem, slowly but surely on the ground in our daily life, in the legislations, the different European and Western legislations, less and less freedom and more expectation from people to spy on their fellow citizens, on their patients, on their students. It's everywhere. So what could be the reaction of citizens within a democratic system?
Well, I think confronting it. I don't have any problem when people say we feel this is the right thing to do. That is the job of the government and the security services. I mean, just traveling up here to the studios, the actual line which everyone seems to have is, if you suspect it, report it.
Yeah.
Now that has become part of our psyche. It's a very bad part of our psyche, because I see that as a doctor, is that one of the things you need to do is give people information, both sides, and let them make a choice. That we can't, and I've always said this to patients, is I can't tell you whether this is 100% this or 100% that. The life of a GP is one of uncertainty. I thrive on that. But the thing that we have is a level of trust with the patient to say, I think this is most likely the thing to happen. So arm people with information. Don't use the fear as a thing to say, well, let us protect you. Hmm. Now, from my perspective, I know what the fears are of generally of my patients. And I'd say the best way to deal with fear is information.
Yeah.
Is not to say, we will actually keep you away from this nebulous fear. Is actually the best way to deal with fears and phobias is to actually confront it.
Yes, but once again, you know, the sense, if you have to resist or to confront these decisions coming, or at least there's new regulations coming from the governments and the different governments, is to say, to confront them. How are you going to do this? What is your suggestion at the grassroots level? You work in an organization which is facing this, which is just even working for the dignity of the people who have been jailed for no reason, are still in jail now for no reason, or not clear, and not rights to defend themselves. How and the sense, the feeling is helplessness. It's just, what can we do against all this? It's too big. So what can you do?
Well, I think that's a very important point, and I hear that from patients, irrespective of their backgrounds and what their ethnicities and religions are. They often say to me, what's the point? I can't do anything. And that is something that I'd say, look, the reality is that you people need to take a stand. I do feel in one sense that because patients do see the role that I do in terms of confronting things, standing up to things, accounting people.
Practically speaking, what does it mean, confronting?
Practically, it means you actually give people a list of things that, look, do this. The amount of times that where you have a problem, it's very easy to say, have you ever thought about speaking to ACAS, which is a conciliation service related to work? Have you ever gone to your MP or counsellor? Do you know that they are there for certain things? Have you ever gone to any other kind of organisations in the voluntary sector? It's empowering people. This is what's very, very important. I mean, my job, I think, is not necessarily always about dishing out a pill. And in fact, when you empower people, particularly as patients, they take charge of their health and they take charge of their issues, and then they are actually more active as citizens. And I agree with that 100%. And I think that until we also, as professionals, who are in a position where you do sit with people in committees and in these type of things, and say you are articulating the voice of the common man, you have a huge responsibility. As a doctor, I know that when I'm going there, I'm not going there for my benefit. I know that I could very easily sit back and do, you know, enjoy my life and play golf like many other doctors. But the reality is that if you want to make a difference and you want to be your patient's advocate, that is part of what our job is advocacy for the patient, then really you should be there not to be silent.
But is it happening? If you have to assess the situation now with your fellow doctors in the UK, for example, what is your assessment? Are they aware of what is happening, that it's very dangerous? It's very dangerous not only for their patients, but for their own profession. This is your business. This is your job. It's just putting something which is lack of trust, questioning the very essence of what it means to be a doctor and to treat someone.
Yeah.
Are they aware? Is there something happening?
Well,
within the Muslim community and outside?
I think often you find in the Muslim community, they feel that as soon as you start talking about these issues, you will be under the spotlight. I mean, I remember a friend of mine was laughing about this when I mentioned this. He said, well, the first person you should shop in is yourself as a doctor, because you are a radicalized doctor. I said, I'm proud to be radical, because radical means to change things. And if you see the situation is wrong, then you need to try and empower people
and change it. How many doctors are ready to take that stand?
Many. I mean, the thing is, if you look at medical history, I mean, this country is very rich with that, is that there are many doctors who have, they haven't made a big song and dance about it. But, I mean, I have to say I'm very proud of being a British GP, because many of the campaigners have come from that profession.
But it means you have to be courageous. to face the reality.
I wouldn't say courageous. Courageous is terms other people might use, but I would say that if you're confronted with something that you feel is wrong, it is really your job to do something. And that's Islamically. It says that, you know, if you see an evil, then, you know, change it.
Change it with your hand.
If you can't, then at least speak out with it. And at least the minimum is to feel bad about it in your heart. That's Islamic.
Yes.
You know, and really, I don't have to preach Islam to people to say, this is the thing, is that patients see it. And they understand that you don't get anywhere by being quiet and just saying that, okay, keep your head down. And I feel hopefully in a small way that you do actually help people to change their situations.
Yes, and quite quickly, a question about do you have doctors from other faiths with no religion helping you on that, working on that, and resisting all these new regulations?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. The thing is it's not... a solitary struggle. I mean, that's one of the things I always say, is that sometimes it might take a few people to stand out and do it. However, that what you find is that when you speak to other people, and often you find this is people of other faith backgrounds or other Muslims who are more in tune with this. I mean, one I spoke to in particular, he was saying, well, this is no different to what used to happen in the Soviet Union, where they used to say that dissidents had a mental illness. They need to be cured of their dissatisfaction with the system. And that's really what is happening in this situation with radicalization.
Thank you very much. I think it's quite important in this discussion what you are saying. The starting point is really to ask the question, what is the role of a medical doctor? Is it to trust and to get this trust from his patient and to trust the patient and to have a very special relationship, and at the end is to protect him, to advocate his rights and not to medicalize anything which is political views and social problems, because it could come from socioeconomic problems and it could come from political views. And what you are saying is that the very essence of being a medical doctor is not to spy on the patients. And the consequence of all these new regulations, first, the first problem is, before even talking about the consequences, is that it's done without consulting the specialist. And this is the starting point of something which is wrong and should change within any democratic system. And the second thing is changing the very essence of the profession. And once again, it's not only a Muslim business. Now, today we are talking about radicalization among Islam, but beyond this is the very essence of the public life, of the role of the medical doctors, and this very specific relationship that should be kept and protected between the patient and the medical doctors and to stand up. You said you are not going to speak about being courageous, but at the end, from outside, it means that we need courageous medical doctors standing for their profession, for the rights of their patients. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here is the way to contact us.
We'd like to hear your views on today's show, as well as ideas for future programs. You can do this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also join our Facebook page by searching Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can view past programs, keep up to date on future shows, leave comments, and meet other Islam and Life fans.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Dr. Adnan Siddiqui. Thank you so much for being with us and for your insight, for a very important discussion, a problem. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.